The majority of renters in California spend more than a third of their monthly income on rent, and that's going up. Over the past 7 years, a typical apartment in California, the rent has gone up by about $500 a month. In San Diego, it's now more than $2,600 a month. The January floods gave a really unfortunate snapshot of this rise. The floods hit some of San Diego's poorest neighborhoods the hardest, and the people who were displaced, many of them had been living in those homes for years and years. So now that they're looking for new leases, they're facing rents that in many cases are higher than their monthly income. The San Diego Housing Commission offered certain flood survivors up to the average monthly rents for, I think it was about 6 months, and they said, we'll cover your rent, and they still couldn't find housing that they could afford. The stakes are high. Princeton's Eviction Lab found that each 10% increase in rent was associated with an 8% higher risk of death. So just this Thursday, a couple dozen public health organizations signed a letter to President Biden asking him to limit rent increase as a public health issue. What does rent control look like right now? So California limits rent increases to 10% a year for tenants living in older apartments. But a law known as Costa Hawkins prevents cities and counties from passing further rent control, like for newer buildings, new tenants, and single family homes. On your November ballot, you'll see Prop 33, it's also called the Justice for Renters Act. And that would repeal the Costa Hawkins law, which allows cities and counties to create more rent control laws. If you're having deja vu, this was on the ballot in 2018 and 2020. Voters voted it down by about 60% both times. It's sponsored by the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. If that sounded odd to you, it threw me at first too. The leader has been criticized for using funds on this. And it's supported by tenant advocacy organizations, labor unions, and the California Democratic Party. Fighting the measure are not just housing providers, but a long list of local leaders, including Mayor Todd Boria and Senator Tony Atkins, and some pro-affordable housing groups like California YIMBY. Apartment and realtor associations have donated more than $67 million to fight Prop 33, compared to almost $42 million to support it. Both sides tend to agree that there's a housing crisis that needs to be addressed, but they differ on how they say it should be addressed, whether rent control would make it better or worse. I will say, in preparing for this, whatever side you land on, you can find research that supports your side. Most of the research is theoretical, so it's people's ideas of what would happen under rent control. So I spoke with a lead researcher who only looked at studies with data from places that have passed rent control and what actually happened there. And here's what they found. Rent control has worked to keep below market rent levels and increase housing stability for those tenants. There's little evidence that rent control prevents necessary upkeeps and improvements to properties, though it does seem like more aesthetic improvements are set aside. There's not a lot of data showing that it slows new construction, but it does lower the amount of rental units overall as owners take them off the market. And there's a lot of debate whether the majority of benefits from rent control go to the families who need it most. As an equity reporter, a few things I'll mention before we begin. This affordability issue falls hardest on Black and Latino renters who rent at higher rates and tend to have lower incomes. Renters are growing, but they still represent a minority of Californians, and historically they're less likely to vote. Voting barriers are higher for many of the people this impacts the most, like people who are unhoused, living with disabilities, work multiple jobs, or single parents. So our panelists, Rafael Bautista, realtor, community organizer, tenants union leader, Lucinda Lilly, former president of the Southern California Rental Housing Association and consultant to rental property owners, Grace Martinez, a community organizer who works statewide on housing issues, and Melanie Woods, Vice President of Local Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association and San Diego's Political Action Manager. Welcome. Thank you all for taking your time to be here today. I really appreciate it. I want to start, we'll have lots of times for questions and digging deeper and details, but I want to start briefly with how you plan to vote on Prop 33 and your top reason why, and we'll start with Grace.
Good morning. I'm Grace Martinez. I'm sorry, I've been to like three cities in the last day, so I'm like, where am I? ACE has endorsed Prop 33. We were originally the proponents for Prop 10 in its first iteration. And the other question was like, what, why do we support it, or?
Yeah, your top reason.
We believe housing is a right. And, you know, this in many cities, I've been organizing, it'll be next week, 21 years. So the majority of, not that I ever said I'm gonna just talk about housing issues. Every city I've organized, housing listing up the white issue. I come from San Francisco, and this is like, it's the ground zero of like, what you know, when you see developers and like putting profits over people and how that's really changed the scope of the city. You know, we are still pushing Gavin Newsom on his promise for a million affordable homes, and he hasn't even gotten to that. He's only put like, what is it, 1% of the of the funding required to get to that. And then still, like, we need policies to protect people as we're building. This is like, housing is not a werewolf. There's no silver bullet. You have to do multiple things. And so we want to make sure that people work with animals, have like, you know, dignified, accessible, and affordable housing. Like, not everyone is making $42 an hour to be able to afford rent, right? And we can't like walk around thinking that housing is like some investment property, some retirement plan, when it is a business. When people, if you go to McDonald's and they give you food poisoning, there is a health department that will shut you down. But when, or if they're, like, there was, I think during the pandemic, there was issues around price gouging. There are times when the government comes in and makes sure that prices and conditions are, you know, are monitored. And we want to make sure that, like, because, you know, people are incentivized about how much money they can get. But at the end of the day, it's like, when we think about what it requires for every person to survive in this world, and decent education, you know, access to healthcare, and also having like a place to live, a roof over your home. When you don't have a roof over your home, how do you function? How do your children go to school? Are you well? And if you're constantly worrying about like, can you afford rent because someone is like, because the market will bear it, it's like, I don't know what kind of capitalist religion that you're falling into, if there's an altar of money that you're looking at the same time. But not every, like, how many jobs do you need to be middle class? How many jobs do you have to pay, you know, are needed in order to pay for housing that has, like, you're subletting to rats, you have mold, and then you're expected to pay $3,200 a month?
Okay. Oh, sorry. Then, yeah, we'll get into it more.
So, yes, I'm 33.
Yeah, thank you. Everything that Grace said, we subscribe to. In addition, we are voting for Prop 33 because Katha Hawkins needs to be repealed. It's a terrible law. It's essentially a government subsidy for the rich. It ensures that private profiteers of capital and land are forever making money. It's a guarantee that they will get a return on their investments, right? So when we're talking about repealing Katha Hawkins, we are trying to give the middle class, the working class, a fair shake. And we see that everything's stacked against them. I mean, we have Governor Tony already coming out against it, right? And this is not like a light counter endorsement from Tony Atkins. This is a very worrisome endorsement against something that would help the people. And we need to really gauge the control that Tony has, that Todd has, that Jennifer Lazar has in making development-oriented policy, because we see that this is the decay of our society. We know housing is the largest portion of our budgets. As you know, I am a real estate broker. I am the director of the San Diego Tenants Union. And when we're approached by tenants who are facing abuse, like the hundreds of tenants that we are organizing currently in Fairbanks Ranch, telling us that they're getting 25% rent increases, and a lot of them are seniors, a lot of them are fixed income, and they're essentially protected by a loophole. When we're talking about Costa Hawkins, that is the biggest loophole to landlords. And we see that ever since it was passed, it's been a situation where it's creating a renter society. We had a higher homeownership occupancy rate in 1992 than we do now. So as we've seen in the last 20 years, the last 30 years, the housing crisis has gotten worse, it has not improved, and we have not had rent control. So we think that it's beyond time. You know, I know the panel heading is it enough or is it too late? We're saying we're not getting enough and it can't be here soon enough. And if we don't get something like this, which will be followed by rent control because there's mechanisms to allow or force rent control in a way for local municipalities, then we're going to be facing even more radical solutions in the future. We're talking about vacancy control. We're talking about limiting speculation, right? By limiting how many, these large equity firms can invest in these properties, right? It's unfair that 25% of the market is gobbled up by investors and regular people can't get access, right? So when we're talking about, you know, changing the dynamics, let's see that owner occupancy rate go up. Let's not create a renter society.
The sentence. That was a lot. Okay, it's on. Good morning. My name is Lucinda Lilly, and as reported, I am a past president of the Southern California Rural Housing Association. I have spent the better part of the past 40 years providing rental housing to people. I do not get up and go to work every day trying to figure out how much money I can get out of a renter. Rather, I go to work every day trying to figure out how I can provide quality rental housing to the people who need it. We don't get up every day either and try to evict people. What I do is represent rental housing owners. And I wanted to correct something. I know that you said that currently we can raise rents 10%. That amount changes every year. In 2019, we passed AB 1482. And it put a rent cap on how much rent increases could be. And the rent cap is 5% plus the cost of living. Currently, year over year, we're looking at a 3.6% cost of living. So rents theoretically can increase by 8.6% over the course of 1 year period of time. That rent cap already exists, and we are doing our best to stay within it. Let me also say that as the economy goes, so too does the housing. And our economy is doing this, and rental housing prices are doing this as well. We are losing rental market value, and we're still providing rental housing. If we cap those rents even further, I fear that a number of things will happen. The amount of development that will occur is going to drop significantly. Latest statistics show that we need 10 housing units do we need over the next 10 years in order to keep up with growth? We're already behind. I'm sorry? So I think it's more than enough. Okay. That's the San Diego alum. And if the rents are capped, considering what the development fees are in order to build rental housing, we're afraid that developers are just not going to build. We won't have any more rental housing. I also fear that the amount of value that's available to take care of properties is going to slide a bit too. Property owners, and if anybody is a property owner, whether it's your own home or a rental housing home, you're already being faced with the almost impossibility to get insurance for your property. And when you can get it, I've heard of reports of 700% increases year over year. How do we absorb all of that and still put that hard line cap on rents? It's really hard. And we agree that there's a problem. But what we also agree on is that, and I think Rafael and Grace would both agree with this, working together to come up with a solution is what's going to be necessary. But to hammer on landlords right now saying that they are all greedy and all horrible is not the answer. So I'll be voting no on 33.
Hi, everyone. Melanie Woods with the California Apartment Association and enthusiastically opposed to Proposition 33. The bottom line is Proposition 33 is going to make our housing crisis worse. This is going to reduce property values. The unbiased legislative analyst's office says that the cost, the decrease in local revenues could be in the tens of millions of dollars. This is less revenue for essential services like public safety and less revenue at a time when our city and county budgets are already squeezed. Proposition 33 is going to make it harder to build affordable housing in California. And it's also going to make it so that local jurisdictions can supersede the historic Tenant Protection Act, as referenced, AB 1482. They'll be able to supersede that legislation to block housing projects. We've already seen this play out in Huntington Beach, where extreme Republican and NIMBYs are citing this legislation as the way that they can circumvent housing laws that are working hard to increase the supply of housing across California. So yes, enthusiastically opposed.
I'd like to ask Grace and Raphael how you would respond to this concern that rent control would lower the amount of rental units and make the housing crisis worse.
Yeah, you know, several of the things that were mentioned are just total lies. They're fabrications. You know, when we're talking about development, what's happened in the last 20 years for development? It hasn't accelerated, and they've taken a lot of regulations off. And we've seen that they don't pass on the savings to the consumers either, right? Well, we're talking about homeownerships and you know, having tenants acquire properties and become homeowners themselves. That's what we want. I mean, we desire affordability so that people can be owners of their homes. Housing is a human right. Everybody should be insured to having that right. Landlords and property owners can miss three mortgage payments and not be evicted, right? Tenants miss one monthly payment and they're evicted immediately, right? And you know, there's a series of threats that loom over tenants' heads, but ultimately we see that real estate investment trusts are becoming more and more powerful. The Black Rocks of the world have incredible amounts of power. Lazard Development and others have incredible amounts of power, and they're deciding and dictating policy. So if the developers are dictating policy, if the YIMBYs are dictating policy, how is it that they can't develop enough to keep up with the demand? You know, it almost seems like they're being intentionally restrictive to keep costs elevated and to keep people imprisoned and keep people forced to make these incredible rent payments, unaffordable rent payments. And then on top of that, they gouge even more. And they were discussing the fact that costs are going up. Yeah, of course costs are going up. A prudent landlord purchases a property knowing costs are gonna go up. They designate specific portions of what their good revenues are gonna be towards those costs. I've talked to many developers. In 2017, I was part of the Lazard Development Academy, and I've been part of the Global Leadership Academy since. And the developers tell us 3 to 4% rent increases every year are sufficient for new developments, right? So we're looking at this and we're saying, yeah, we want housing costs to come down. Prices should come down. They should be more affordable. But this myth that, you know, property value is going down and, you know, the conditions are gonna get worse for renters, how much worse? They're already terrible. There's already a lack of accountability. There's already a lack of true policies that we can force the landlords to do the right thing. And the other factor is that the Tenant Protection Act 2019 has a sunset clause. It ends in 2030. So, you know, how long are we gonna go through this? You know, the last 4 years, it was 10% every year for most tenants. because of the inflation. 5% plus 5%, maxing them out at 10, right? So they've already been gouged 40% in the last few years. What are they trying to do for the next 10?
I agree with everything that Rafa says. I think one, just to throw it out there, we don't hate all landlords. There's this one Ginger, she's great. Is Ginger here? Oh, give me your hand. The question was like, what are the response to a lot of that? I think that, you know, like we see places, and I'm sure there's a lot of criticism around this. It's like we places that already have rent control has not slowed down development. We know that in San Diego, how much development has occurred, and this is one of the places that had no rent protections. And if we look at some of these were typical, like Prop 33 simply is allowing local cities to expand, if they even have any, to expand rent control, to address their housing needs based on what works for them, right? Like what happens in, I don't know what's wealthy around here, but like a wealthy neighborhood is not gonna have the same type of rent control policies, even though they should. Compared to like a place like, you know, San Francisco and even different parts of San Francisco. Like San Francisco's property values are through the roof. If you could own property there and you will hold on to that, right? And like when I came down to San Diego and looked at some of like the the prices, I was like, oh my God, like I wish I still had money. I wish I had money to buy any of it, but it was still comparatively affordable, right? And I think what a lot of these arguments, like we feel like, oh, we have to recreate the mill every time. Everybody here is familiar with Prop 13, right? This is like, that's the communist plot that we're all gonna overturn that. This was the same message around property values, right? We have rent control, we have mortgage control for property owners. They get like, there's a freeze on their mortgage about how much taxes they're gonna pay on it, but we can't pass that same type of mentality to renters. And this, the way that that was built was like, oh, we'll have a trickle-down effect and like renters will have a savings on it. What ended up happening? It's like our schools get defunded, we don't have money into infrastructure, and we have to let development in order to like bring in revenue into the city. So some of those arguments, it's like this ultimately, this is not about like the best solution, this is about a moral issue. Do we believe that people should be housed? When we look out there and we see people living in their car with children, working two jobs because they can't pay $3,200 a month on rent for substandard housing, what exactly does it mean? It's like, we gotta protect, you know, development and like this future generation. When we have seen this all over California, this is not a new problem. This is a moral issue and not an economic issue. This is not a crisis of housing. This is a crisis of profit.
I want to ask Melanie and Lucinda how you would respond to the concern that affordable housing isn't being built fast enough, and without rent control, many more Californians could become homeless in the coming years.
So Proposition 33 would enable local jurisdictions, local bureaucrats and elected officials to come in and set the rental rates and tell property owners how much they can charge for their units. So, let me back up. This is not about rent control up and down. Rent control, as was mentioned, already exists throughout California in dozens of jurisdictions. This is about extreme forms of rent control. So local jurisdictions could come in and set the price that property owners can charge for their units. So let's say a jurisdiction decides to set that price at $500 that you can write down your one bedroom unit for. Do you think that developers are gonna keep building when they know they'll only ever be able to charge $500 for a unit? There's just no way to make that pencil. So I think you don't have to take our word for it. You can look to the dozens of elected leaders, progressive elected leaders and housing advocates who have joined our coalition, and the numerous housing and veteran groups, Carpenters, the NAACP, who have signed on to the coalition no on Proposition 33.
First of all, Rafael, I'm not a liar. Thank you. Second of all, eviction, as Mr. Bautista has represented, a renter can miss 1 month's rent and be evicted. And I'll tell you that eviction is a last resort for housing providers. Patricia, it's true. Well, I do not recommend my clients to evict somebody based on 1 month's rent. Things happen. Cars break down. People get sick. They can't work. What we'd love to see is some temporary supportive financial aid provided to get people through a hump if that's what they need. Again, eviction is a last resort for us. Lack of accountability was something that was discussed as well. I am the first to admit that there are landlords who are bad actors, either bad actors on purpose or because they don't know what they're doing. Either way, I will agree with that. I will also say that one of the reasons that I still am participating in rental housing industry is to educate and collaborate with rental housing providers so that they do know the right things to do. We already have measures in place. I just don't believe that going even further is a requirement at this time.
I did want to ask, so you brought up this hypothetical of capping it at $500 that could be possible under this law. This would be local municipalities coming up with rent control laws that could look like anything. I'm wondering if either of you see, is there any form of healthy rent control, or do you think that it shouldn't exist?
Rent control does already exist. It exists throughout California. Local jurisdictions already are empowered to put rent control in place. We're seeing it come forward in lots of jurisdictions. This is not about rent control. This is about extreme forms of rent control.
What would you say is the line for extreme?
Currently, state law has struck a balance. ACE stood behind the governor as he signed into law AB 1482, which struck a balance between tenant protections and put in place statewide rental caps at 5% plus the cost of inflation. So we already have rent caps throughout California.
I'm wondering if this were to pass, if you both think that this is enough, or, and if not, what more is needed to address a housing crisis?
Yeah, obviously in San Diego, this is not enough. We don't have local rent control. We have seen cities like Pasadena and others start enacting rent control, capping it at inflation, or 2 or 3%. That's what we would desire to see. What we originally started organizing, we had tenants vote on this, and it was clear 2% is something that they can manage, something that they can expect, something that will allow them to be secure in their homes and be able to fight for their families to have a better future. I did want to talk about the fact that they're posing this as an extreme measure. This is only removing a terrible policy, right? A terrible policy that ensures profits for profiteers, and under the premise of capitalism, maximizing profits is the motive, right? So when we're talking about, you know, the 1 month mispayment, landlords are eager and they'll find any loophole, and when there's no loopholes, they'll break the laws to try to evict tenants. We've seen this countless times. We brought it to you in the media with Kelly Street Tenants and countless others. Very recently, Michael Contreras, who's an atrocious slumlord who lives in an $8 million mansion in La Jolla, owns tons of property here in Linda Vista. A disabled woman, senior disabled woman, missed one payment because she fell and hurt herself because she didn't have a ramp accessible to leave her home when she was wheelchair bound. And because of this, her son missed work. They couldn't make the rent payment that month. They are trying to make it on the 20th, and the landlord refused. They took them through the lawful detainer court and got them out. This is what they do because they have the power to do this, because they have the funds, the resources, and the policy backing them to be able to abuse tenants. And we know that it's not all landlords. Most working class landlords, mom and pops, they share the struggle of the working class. They understand that a working class person is not going to get a 10-20% rent raise on their wage. So they're not going to impose a 10-20% rent increase. But in fact, we've seen all the large landlords year after year impose 10% rent increases, and that's because they're capped. Otherwise, they would come higher.
I think that, and I think I've mentioned this before, it's like housing is not, there's no silver bullet to address a lot of these things, right? Like when we think about like, you know, how rents go up, what it does is that people who are lower income don't have access to it. And then middle class people who typically buy housing are now like, right, they would, you know, so now what we're doing is like, we're taking a lot of rent that would typically be affordable to people who like should be able to buy housing. And now we're at this place where like there is no affordable housing. We have people who are homeless. We have like teachers, nurses who are like, I can't buy anything. Getting to a place where it's like, you know, they're taking up all the rental stock, which isn't a bad thing. But like, if we are trying to increase the number of units available, then, you know, why can't we buy? And the thing is, when it comes to market prices, this isn't magic. This is like an industry that gets to set their standard. It's like, we don't have like, does that house really go for $1 million because of the cost of labor and all of those things? It's like, no, it's because that's what people are willing to buy. And unfortunately, and Rafa would probably know this, is typically a speculator at buying tons and tons of property. I think what we do need, like the AB 1482 was something that, you know, in our attempt to pass Prop 10 and even our attempt to overturn Costa Hawkins through the legislation, it was like we had a more extreme version of this. Because a part of like AB 1482 wasn't just even the rent cap, which was a big piece, but to Rafa's point, no one is making increase of like 8% per year in their wages, right? Their income is not increasing at that rate, and God forbid at 10%, right? That would be great. That's like a really good union. If you're part of that union, you keep building that union. The other piece to this is that, like, you know, what are the other things we need to do? It's like we do have to build excess, you know, like land trusts are a big thing. De-commodifying a lot of the housing stock is going to be clear, because like we look at Blackstone, right? What's happening right now? They buy, like, a lot of local developers, even other property owners, had no access to that. You just exchange it from one billionaire to another billionaire. And that is naturally affordable housing. Like, it bursted from the ground, and all of a sudden it was like, it wasn't like that at all. This was slum housing. It was housing that was substandard, that like one very wealthy company that is buying housing all over the world has access to. That is where these policies come into play and why we need them. They are bad actors. And like even then, 1482, compared to a lot of policies and what we need to do to protect people, it is not enough. And like big thing with Just Cause, it just allows to make sure that the law is clear why you're being evicted. Because landlords oftentimes, not just even here in San Diego, places that have those policies, it's like they just do whatever the hell they want. I'm not saying all, because people need to be educated, but there are enough cases where the narrative becomes an issue where there are way too many bad landlords that we need legislative action.
They bring up large corporate landlords. We know that's a sliver of the market. I'm wondering if you could see a healthy form of rent control for companies like Blackstone, or if you think that would also be detrimental.
Like I mentioned, rent control does already exist. I would like to talk about slumlords, like you mentioned. The sponsor of Proposition 33, the person who brought forward justice for renters, is a notorious slumlord up in Los Angeles. He has a track record of not maintaining his units. There's been a lot of news coverage about how the condition that his housing units are in, because he's taking his profits and he's diverting them away from patient care and using them for a political war chest to fight housing across California.
So Grace and I agree, education for landlords is definitely necessary.
We need to continue to provide best practices and how to manage property and own property well to provide quality housing to renters all across the board. What I don't get is the correlation between the rate control that's being proposed and education. It doesn't seem to mesh. Again, I think that by working together to make sure that landlords, people who own and manage rental property, understand that it is people. I think the term you used was people before profits. And while I don't think that capitalism is the big bad ugly wolf, I do think that the majority of people who provide rental housing are doing the best to provide this housing and getting by. Did they invest at some point, maybe to have something to live off of when they retire? Yeah, there are a lot of people who did that. Are the corporations also bound by the same E1482 that we are as independent rental owners? Yeah, they are. Corporations are not all bad. I just don't understand quite how furthering the existing rate caps that we have is going to solve the education and the support of the rental housing providers that needs to be given. I just don't get the correlation.
One thing I wanted to ask you both is, you know, overturning Costa Hawkins, it wouldn't automatically create new rent control laws. It would just put it closer to the hands of local voters. Do you see an issue with that?
So overturning Costa Hawkins does three things. It allows for rent control in new construction. It allows for rent control in single family homes, and it allows for vacancy decontrol. So, and you have a vacancy, you have the ability to bring your unit back up to market rate, because likely you've had a tenant in there a long time, you're charging well below market rent because they're a good tenant and they've been there a while. But then you know that when there's a vacancy, you're able to bring that unit back up to market rent. That's how you're able to cut that person to break, right? Currently. So overturning Costa Hawkins would allow local governments to take away those three things and puts local elected leaders in charge of setting rental rates. I think the market is doing a good job of deciding what those rates are now, and the additional rent control is just not necessary in those areas.
How many of you respond?
Yeah, those three items should be removed. They should not be in policy. They should not be law in California. And when we're talking about rent control, we're not talking about extreme forms of rent control. We want to see efficient forms of rent control, because rent control riddled with loopholes is not efficient. We knew that when TPA passed, and we needed it desperately. And that's why it has a 10-year sunset clause, right? But we need permanent solutions. We can't afford these 10% rent increases or 8% rent increases or whatever, you know, the CPI will be plus the 5%. Guaranteeing a 5%, right? Year over year. I mean, we're talking about them cataloging this Prop 33 as some radical law, in the same way that the MAGA supporters are cataloging Kamala Harris as a communist, right? This is a total fabrication of what's happening. And as a matter of fact, again, when government is enforcing laws to benefit private owners, this is a type of socialism, right? And this is the worst type of socialism. This is Trump socialism. So getting rid of it and allowing local municipalities to do something that's gonna be effective, efficient, then I think that's, you know, she made a very clear point. You know, these three things should be, they should be out of the way. Vacancy decontrol doesn't mean the government comes and sets the rates for the rents on properties. It just means that the rent that was set by the previous tenant can be raised $1,000 on the next tenant. That sounds kind of fair.
I was just thinking about the sponsor of Prop 33 and, like, you know, I don't know too much about, like, his landlording because I just haven't paid attention to that, but the opposition of, like, Costa Hawke, like, of every iteration of this is, like, been Blackstone, and they support, I think, Donald Trump. So I guess that the whole rhetoric on, like, eating dogs, Haitians eating dogs, maybe that's something we should look into as well. I don't, like, at this point, this is about a policy. The funding of it, we're constantly outspent by the opposition. So there's money. People have money to put into this. Maybe they should hold on to that to improve the units of those own conditions and stop fighting like these. And it's probably because it's from their getting even more rent increases from all these, you know, lack of rent control locally. Where is that money coming from?
Let's put Borussia.
Yeah, and just to add, as far as the AIDS Healthcare Foundation funding this proposition, as Kate mentioned, housing and health are interrelated. And the other factor is housing and education are interrelated. In San Isidro, we had record children homeless. Now, do you think that kids that are living in their cars are going to be able to study with the same amount of privilege that someone that has a secure household is holding to, right? These are barriers against our community.
This is the third time as he's been on the ballot, and I'm wondering if any of you have thoughts on what's different this time around. I actually wanted to before answering a question, and thank you, Katie. There's a lot of incendiary terms being used, and I've wanted to make sure that as a group we understand that people who own real property are not typically criminals. We're not out to make things worse for people. That's not what we do every day when we get out. And again, there are safeguards in place. Rafa, you mentioned the lady who was wheelchair bound and didn't have a ramp to get into her home. Well, there are fair housing laws that protect people with disabilities to be able to provide those types of services, the ramp or the grab bars or things like that. So I believe that we have the laws that we need. What we need is for people to understand how to operate within it so that we can continue to provide good housing for people. I'm just, again, not sure how it is that putting another layer onto people who are trying to provide rental housing is gonna be the solution. I think there's something more that we might need to be doing. So, and I totally forgot what your question is. So,
what is different this time? That's the third time it's been on the ballot.
It's funny because it's not much different and the voters have voted it down twice already.
Yeah, I'd agree with this, that the sponsor of this bill has an enormous war chest that he's using to bring this forward for a third time. The voters have already spoken twice by a margin of nearly 20% each time, and yet our industry continues to fight this battle because we understand that this extreme form of rent control is not the solution to our housing crisis. We talk about fabrication. The Yes on Prop 33 campaign actually used Kamala's likeness to try and say that she supports Yes on Prop 33. She has not weighed in on that campaign, and she's not in support of Yes on Prop 33.
No, I'm sorry, is it just a response to that? What's different?
I mean, I'm just going to be honest, like, I don't think it's nothing. It's just a constant, like, this, we've been in the same crisis. Like, I think in a lot of these, like, in the way that this is put out, it's like you're thinking me and Roth are at, like, some, like, you know, secret, you know, Italian restaurant where we're plotting and we're, you know, we're wearing our berets because we're communists. You know, we have no salt and pepper. We don't like our food seasoned either. So I don't think there, I think that in the same way that the housing crisis hasn't changed. It's gotten worse and worse, right? And so I think that when we talk about like any political campaign and like talk about a war chest, the opposition has a massive war chest. When I was working on Prop 10, it was really hard because like a lot of tenants were very confused. Like they were billing this is rent control. It's like, it's not. It allows for the expansion of local cities to expand rent control. It is not rent control, but that's what tenants are being told. And they were also being told like, there was the sad landlord that, you know, like when we talk about small property owners, it's not the mom and pop and always wants to be the mom and pop that's like someone's grandmother, you know, but the one property. AB 1482, that doesn't even apply to that grouping of people. When we talk about, you know, the mom and pops that are crying over this are typically like, it's five units. Was it 10 units? I can't even remember. It's a larger number. It's like, I don't know what the mom and pop at this point is, because that's way more property than myself. That's way more property than someone who just has one home. So, I mean, yeah, maybe we have to overturn it. That doesn't need to be different other than the crisis is still bad and we keep ringing the bell that we need stronger protections. And like I said, this is the big stick, but it doesn't mean that we can't continue to create like more solutions locally, because we still need to build housing. We need to make sure that there's real affordable housing. But we also need legislation that, how about this? There are enough bad actors that it requires legislation. There are enough like people who are uneducated about this and don't care to be educated about this, because once you go into a business, don't you want to learn that business? It is not an excuse to go into making money and say, I don't want to learn the rules of what this is, of what decent and affordable housing is. That is not an excuse.
So just to confirm, AB 1482 applies to all properties, two units or more on piece of property. That's what AB 1482 is. It doesn't start with like five units. So just a point of that. And I think we agree we need more housing. So how do we build more housing? How do we do that? How do we incentivize that?
We're about putting it on the rent.
The way to do it?
We're about to do the IM question, so I just want to make sure you have a chance to answer.
Yeah, I do see several differences. First of all, the pandemic occurred. Second of all, we've seen 10% rent increases year over year for some people a lot higher, like affordable housing tenants, who are not part of the law. And in the last few years, we've seen several cities pass rent control, way smaller cities than San Diego. And unfortunately, San Diego has become the least affordable city in the country, right? And the worst city for black renters. So these are factors that we have to take into consideration why other cities that are smaller are seeing this as a problem. And acting upon it when our city council has seen it as a problem for so many years, and all they say is, oh, rent control is illegal because Casa Hawkins, as if they didn't know that they can pass rent control. So there are marketing differences now, and the housing crisis is a lot worse. Just so to end our opposing debaters here made a very obvious example of what's the problem. There are laws and the landlords break them, right? So we need stronger laws and we need accountability. So, you know, when we're talking about rent control, we always talk about a panel or a board of rent control, right? Elected by people that are affected, because that's how we are able to counter this. Just one final thing. David Yilmaz, a horrendous slumlord who was part of the Southern California Rental Housing Association and used their documents to oppress dozens of tenants in his 12 plus buildings in San Diego, he died and he left hundreds of people in deplorable living conditions. We're talking about holes in their windows, in their ceilings, in their walls, rat infestations, cockroach infestations, all contributing to shortening people's lifespans. And this is all in the front in City Heights on people of color.
We're gonna move to audience questions. Yeah.
So, is this on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you can.
Great, I have a stack of questions here.
But before we move to all the audience questions, we're actually going to have a first question from a high school student. One of our Aaron Pines fellows, her name is Naomi Shin. Naomi, you want to stand up? Each year that Aaron Price Fellows Program selects 40 kind, inquisitive, and open-minded ninth graders like Naomi from a pool of 300 applicants for a three-year journey. They go behind the scenes to see how cities function, explore the role of community members in shaping society, and develop empathy and skills for navigating the diverse world. Program is a high school leadership experience started in 1991 by the Christ family, the founders of Christ Club and Christ Heart. And the mission of the Aaron Price Fellows Program is to prepare a highly motivated group of San Diego Public High School students to be responsible, engaged, and caring members of their community. Today, there are over 1,000 Aaron Price Fellows alumni, 500 locally carrying out the mission of the program and making a difference in their families, careers, and communities. So they always going to ask the first question, and then we'll turn it back over to Katie to take questions from the audience. We both show my card. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Naomi Shim, and I'm a junior in University High School. And my question is for Raphael and Grace. You've already briefly touched on this, but I wanted to ask for elaboration on this fire. So my question is, given the failure of similar rent control propositions in 2018 and 2020, what new campaign strategies do you think could drive a different outcome for Proposition 30?
Yeah, unfortunately, in both cases, the opposition has spent a countless amount of money, so they have unlimited resources. And the only way for us to actually be able to counter that is by pointing out their propaganda as lies, which they are. They're saying housing will be reduced. They're saying that people won't build and that there's, the conditions are going to go terrible for the tenants, right? We already see a lot of these conditions, and we don't see rent control in place. But as far as, you know, how we're pushing in is we always organize with people on the ground. So impacted tenants, driving the story through the media, and making sure that word of mouth gets around, right? Housing costs are not something that only impact tenants. And that's something that many times people don't understand. As a real estate broker, I can tell you that housing costs affect us all. And the fact that a lot of investors are vampirically removing wealth from our communities by gouging our people and taking it elsewhere, right, outside of San Diego, they're keeping money that should be recirculated by tenants on needs out of our communities. So, you know, we're wanting to make sure people understand that this is an affront to working class communities, and this is why Prop 33 should be passed.
You know, so your other question is like, are there any new strategies to this? You know, I think Rafa said it, and I think with any type of campaign, especially when you're on, you know, outspent, is like really getting, you know, tenants and people who are impacted by this to go out and talk about like what their stories are and how, you know, truthfully, like how it really helps them. Because the reality is, if it does pass, it doesn't mean like the same thing with AB 1482. Once it passed, there was an issue like enforcement. Like, and cities having to adopt it. Like, and in San, and I know it's not even the question, but even how the city of San Diego had to understand, like, what was grandfathered from, like, their tenant right to know ordinance, which no one knew about, which is really interesting to name it that. But, you know, there was still adaptation to a lot of this. So I think with Prop 33, like any campaign, you need to make sure it's all about voter education and getting out. Now, it is about to be October. I'm not privy to any of that strategy, and nor am I going to give out any of my own strategy to do that. I will talk to the members about it. But I don't think, you know, this is just really going to be like getting out the vote and talking.
But we read that.
What's different this time around? There are a number of progressive organizations that have previously been in support of the measures that came before Proposition 33 that have taken a neutral or opposed position this time around.
Current legislation restricts rank control to older humans. I know you've mentioned many times there is rank control in place, and that you said you thought they struck a line. Would you object to applying that current policy to all units? AB 1482 does not apply to houses, condominiums, individual units, and it doesn't apply to properties that were built within the past 15 years. And the reason it doesn't apply to properties that were built within the past 15 years was there was a carve-out to incentivize, again, more development of property. The cost of development is astronomical. I think there was a developer I was having a conversation with and in the city of San Diego, before you even break ground on a 15, 16 unit apartment community, there's about $170,000 in fees that have to be paid before you can even break ground. It was an astronomical amount of money. And as my cohort here said, if that rent control were applied immediately, there's no way that they would be able to afford built properties. They wouldn't be able to afford to pay the mortgage and the construction loans and things like that. So I think that, again, AB 1482 does strike a good balance. And I'll go back to the accountability piece. I would love to work with you to educate and make sure that landlords understand what their responsibilities are in addition to their rights. Our associations are all about both landlord and residents' rights and responsibilities. This isn't us against them in any way, shape, or form. We have a housing crisis. Let's solve it together. I just don't think this is the way to do it.
Yeah, I think we hear a lot about bad actors and price gouging and harassment. All of those things are already illegal, and this new proposition does nothing to further enforce the things that are being referenced. The bottom line is this is going to make our housing crisis worse.
Speaking to that, I'm wondering if either of you have ideas of policies or additional interventions if this proposition passes. This audience member is asking, how will we offset potential risks? For example, the incentive for landlords to switch to short-term rentals instead of long-term housing.
So one of the issues with AB 1482 is for people here, when do you become a customer? When you buy something, you become a customer. And for under AB 1482, I think you have to be a tenant for 12 years. So you are now literally paying for those accommodations, but you do not get protections right away. You gotta wait 12 years. Now, that doesn't make sense to me, because once my money leaves my account, in order to make sure that I am paying for a service, that automatically means that I have some kind of consumer rights. I think that those are some things about AB 1482 and also additional protections that we have to look at. I think my concern is that we are using AB 1482, which I don't think is even strong enough, as the reason why we can't do anything local. And I think, what's hard is that it has been the California Apartment Association that bought us every time on AB 1482, and any type of statewide rent control. California is one of three states in the entire United States that haven't any form of just cause or tenant protection. And if we look around the United States, it's what's their housing crisis like?
Yeah, so the tenants union has taken a multi-pronged approach already. Not only do we advocate for rent control and against displacement, we've also sued the city of Encinitas for not allowing affordable housing to be built, right? We've also been bringing cases about affordable housing to elected officials because they're in a loophole, right? They can get 25% rent increases and they can just get away with it. So when we're looking at, this change of law and making sure that it does cover, as much property as possible, we're leveling out the playing field. So, when the landlords control the pricing, they control the conditions, they control policy, then we're gonna see the results, which are the current results. We're on our, I think, 20th year of housing crisis, and we're like 13 years where homeless numbers have risen and they can't keep up with the people that are being rehoused, right? So more people are becoming homeless than the people that are actually getting rehomed. And there's only one explanation. It's bad actors and there's a lack of controls. So that's...
For Lucinda and Melanie, why should this be decided at the state level and not the city or county level?
We're not the ones who put this on the ballot. This is the third attempt to bring this forward statewide. So we didn't make that decision.
I think they're asking, you know, if this were to pass, then it could be decided at the city and county level. Why not allow it to be decided at that level rather than the state level?
California already has in place, as they mentioned, with 1482, the most protective, most tenant protections of any state in the United States. This AB 1482 was historic in how far it goes to protect tenants. Those protections don't kick in after 12 years. They kick in after 12 months, a standard lease term. And that's when the just cause protections are in place.
I understand, you know, voicing why you think it shouldn't be passed, but just want to ask again, why not let local voters decide?
Local voters will be deciding on election day.
Yeah, so, you know, the California law is, you know, what it is, but it's a vanilla standard, right? We can't say that a standard that applies for the entire state should be something that solves San Diego's problem. San Diego has a very unique situation going, and we think that only locally we can actually create the solution.
Do you have time for one more? I wanted to add something.
I'm more of it. I'm a builder.
Going back to state versus localities, localities do have the ability to do certain things, and we're seeing certain localities looking into these options. And the point that I will state again is that what I'm hearing being said is that there are bad actors who need to be brought in line, but imposing rent control the way that it's being presented right now doesn't do anything about that. And I just don't think that this is the way to solve the problem when what we have is an education and humanity issue. And I think that in working together, I've said it a billion times today, we can educate and support and collaborate so that people can provide quality rental housing for the people who need it.
Someone asked, is rent control something that would apply to all rentals in a zip code or county? I think part of this law is that this is cities and counties creating rent control laws. And I'm wondering if the panelists can speak to how much flexibility would be in that. What kind of rent controls would you hope that they would set? Would it be blanket or tailored?
You know, it's interesting because, like, the, you know, when you're dealing with a lot of lawyers who are having to go to court, it's like, and also when we're bouncing the pandemic, there's like, what, 17 municipalities in San Diego for 13 different types of moratoriums. And it was challenging because, like, you know, we were lucky that we had to push the county to come up with it, use their police powers to do that. And that made, like, education, as well as, like, you know, both for us as, like, advocates to, like, make sure people knew what their rights were, and also for, like, lawyers who are coming in there, the laws were very clear, right? And I lost my train of thought because my mind went there. What was the question? Oh, it's like a tailored versus
I think that the more it's clear, like the rights are very, for every renter are clear, then I think the outcome, then it'll be easier to like enforce this when it comes to court. And that's the thing is like, we might say it's like, that's not our first response is eviction. The same problem is the outcome has been eviction. It is, you know, there's been hella last resorts right now, right? Because that's why a lot of our service providers who are doing this, like LA doesn't even have, like LA has strong protections. There's so many evictions, they don't have enough attorneys in order to address that, right? And a lot of this comes down to what is the real clarity in the law, you know, and what can a landlord, what can and cannot happen. And I think that's education, but also having stronger policies so that people aren't going and like violating what that protection is.
We need to wrap up, but I did want to ask Lucinda one final question.
Sure.
And just point of clarity, the tenants union supports universal rent control, application of rent control on properties.
I did want to ask, you had mentioned to me that you think the market's already overregulated, and part of that is that a patchwork of laws is hard to follow. Can you speak for?
No, I think Grace already stuck to it, and 17 different municipalities, 17 different codes that have to be followed, and it's just this patchwork. AB 1482 is for all properties throughout the state of California, other than houses and condominiums and properties built within the past 15 years. To have a patchwork and not even understand how to navigate the state, like, you know, we can teach, but you are property in National City and another part of beach where laws are different. It really is very convenient. And to Grace's point, she's right. Even the attorneys have work on phone. So making it specific to localities, which is part of the metric. Thank you, Jonathan Livingston.
Yep, so obviously this is a very live thing that you go on and on, but we do have to cap it because we have another event in this room coming up. If you want to stick around the next session, which is debate with San Diego City Council candidates, Sean Emilio Rivera and Tilly Hopkins,